the world tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Is the Bible out of date in the space age? Has scientific experiment rendered the passages of your Bible out of date and obsolete? Even on some of the leading weekly news magazines in the United States, you read statements like, "Is God dead?" And people would tell you by the thousands today that certainly evolutionists in all the various breakdowns of evolution, paleontology, chemistry, biology, zoology, comparative embryology, all the various special fields have long since proved that the Bible is out of date, that there is no God, that life gradually evolved on the earth. But is it true? And if so, have they really proved it after all? You're living in a world of two great faiths. First of all, a faith in absolutely nothing, and secondly, a faith in everything. Now, what do I mean by that? I'm here to tell you that evolution is a faith in absolutely nothing, and I'll prove it to you in the statements of evolutionists themselves. A proof in no proof whatsoever. Now, many people today believe firmly, and they've never seen it proved, but they think that they have, and it's a positive conviction of theirs, that science has now rendered the Bible obsolete and has disproved the Bible. But has it really? Can you afford to make a mistake? Because here's the big what if in it all. What if evolution, after all, is not true? And it isn't, and I can prove it. What if, after all, evolution is a shaky framework of a lot of half-conceived notions and hazy guesses? And what if evolution doesn't have a leg to stand on? Then you're only left with one alternative, and that is that this entire universe, the Earth, the solar system, you and your life, are the result of a great special planned creation. And if that is true, that great creator, that all-wise divine architect, does exist. The life-giver does exist. And there is a great purpose being worked out, and there is a plan and a purpose involving your private life. That's what if. Now, as I've said, I can prove it to you, but of course that's only to those who are willing to look into it and to listen, and to look into it with an open mind for themselves. Time and again, we have put articles in the Plain Truth magazine on the subject of evolution. The Plain Truth is a unique magazine unlike anything you've ever read before. It's 52 pages, four full color. Four color is perhaps a technical term, but that means a full color array printed on modern big web presses. From three distribution centers around the world, sent to people all over the world, more than 4 million people read it. It's absolutely free of charge. There is no cost. There is no advertisement. There is no urge to join anything. But the Plain Truth magazine not only takes you behind the scenes in today's pulsating world events and makes them real to you and shows you what the future holds and shows you what will be happening in the near future, but also every single month we've been running articles for those who are still inclined to research it on the subject of evolution. We've had articles about where woodpeckers got the idea they ought to bang their heads against wood and how they eat that way and how did these things evolve. If evolution is true, then how is it true? Does it have an answer? Can it tell you exactly how this notion of the survival of the fittest and natural selection and adaptation, ecological chain, variety and coloration, on and on and on, that this can really answer the really big questions about the origin of life and whether a moth changes color in Pittsburgh because it's sooty and smoky doesn't make it something other than a moth. And so every month in the Plain Truth magazine are articles on this subject. Now, I want to read to you a letter we got recently because this was in answer to one of these articles in the Plain Truth magazine. It comes from a man in Arizona. And I'll read his words because I appreciate them, but you may not agree with them. But this is what he said. This is, for what it's worth, this is the age of saying this. One man's opinion. People like to say, well, that's just my opinion. So this is his opinion. He said, I had been so infested with evolutionary reasoning that I knew the only way I could prove the truth or falsity of evolution was to study the college textbooks in more detail, being careful to differentiate between opinion and fact as presented in these books. He said in parenthesis, it can be done if one is careful. Have you ever thought to do that, to differentiate between opinion and facts in college textbooks? I brought some of those college textbooks right here to the radio desk, and I have placed them here. I've read from them, and we have underlined the supposes, perhapses, possibles, and maybes, and we've seen by the time you get through with it, that's all you've got. A whole lot of assumptions, a lot of guesswork. And two chapters later, you're reading about this did happen, the other thing did occur, in positive past tense, and you're subjected to a lot of intellectual pressure, and the first thing you know, they've got you believing it. Now, a few people have begun to have the courage to go back, not just to swallow something they hear on this program, and not just to believe me because I sound like I believe it, and not to believe me because somebody else believes it. But they've begun to have the courage to go back and to look into the source of their own convictions. That's what this person did. He looked to his own college textbooks. Now, here's what he said. I soon discovered that these books invariably state that organic evolution is a fact, and with the same breath, proceed to present facts that prove just the opposite. Now again, I'm quoting his words. I can't help it if I enjoy them. Forgive me for that, but I just do enjoy this. He says, the poor intellectual slobs that write these books are so obsessed with trying to prove that everything has a natural cause that they can't see that they are holding the proof of creation in their own hands. Now, I've said recently that we're living in the day and age where we have at our disposal more of the tools of science for observation, for measurement, for weight, for experimentation, and for investigating the fantastic creation all around us that we are now, as never before, without excuse for denying the existence of God. We have at our disposal today more tools than ever before for proving the magnificence of the existence of a creator God, and for proving his purpose in our lives. If you think science and the Bible are in conflict, then you've got another think coming, because that's just not true, and I can prove it, and we are proving it continually in the pages of the Plain Truth magazine, in these booklets I announced, Does God Exist? The one on the proof of the Bible. It's free of charge, no price, no pressure on you to join anything. Just get it out in the light of day and prove it to yourself one way or the other. That's the point. Now, certainly one of the most prominent and noted among evolutionists is George Gaylord Simpson, who has written books on the subject. In one of his books, he said this, and I want to corroborate what this man put in his letter. He said that he looked back in the college textbooks, and he finds that when one tries to differentiate between opinion and fact, and you can do it, he said, if you're careful, that you will find that they invariably state that organic evolution is a fact, but almost in the same breath turn right around and tell you it is not a fact. I want to corroborate that by quoting from just such textbooks for a moment. Now, a very noted evolutionist and paleontologist is George Gaylord Simpson. He wrote in one of his books, it is an obvious lesson from the history of scientific progress that in science one should never accept a metaphysical explanation if a physical explanation is possible or indeed conceivable. Now, some of the conceivable ideas they have are, I could just lump them together right quickly again as I have recently, for instance, the origin of life. Here's what you're going to find in various textbooks on the subject. Life came from polka-dotted air bubbles in the sea. That's one theory. Life came from ice particles raining down out of the heavens. That's another theory. Life came from cracks in rocks. That's another theory. Life came from brown scum. That's still another theory. Life came from green slime. That is still another theory. Life came from a primeval, sort of a thin soup, a chemical mixture, and by theory, one day, a spark of life was struck. So goes the theory. That's six, an interesting number. That's man's number, and there are about six of them, so far as I can determine, but there may be another one or two by now, because I haven't yet read today's scientific section of the newspaper. And I've told you in the times past, there are just about as many theories for the origin of man as there are paleontologists or anthropologists who propose them. And there's no end to it. There is more disagreement, and there are more varied theories and notions in these various so-called sciences than there are among religionists. It's a fantastic subject when you look into it. Now, I want to show you, this is a statement that is about like a man who is descending from the top of a tall building, and he is given directions or an instruction to do this. It's fantastic. He's got a ladder. Maybe it's an escape ladder. The building's on fire. He's up at about the 100th story or something. So he's got about a 1,000-foot ladder, but the first six rungs are missing. And somebody says, okay, you first, head down. Incidentally, watch out for that first step. What are his chances of making it safely to the ground? Now let me read the statement The theory just outlined, this was how evolution has occurred. The theory, said Professor Simpson, this is the theory about producing life, quote, his words, obviously does not yet answer all questions or plumb all mysteries. It casts no light on the ultimate mystery, the origin of the universe, and the source of the laws or physical properties of matter, energy, space, and time. Let me repeat. It casts no light on the ultimate mystery, the origin of the universe, the source of laws or physical properties of matter, energy, space, and time. Nevertheless, once these properties are given, the theory demonstrates that the whole evolution of life could happen. Isn't that something? The theory casts no light on all of these vast, almost incomprehensible questions. The source of life, the origin of the universe, where did matter come from? Energy, space, and time. What about all the laws, the forces, and the energies? No knowledge, no light, not one little pinprick of light in impenetrable darkness. Nevertheless, once you take all these properties, once you assume all these properties and they are given and out of the way, that's the missing six rungs at the top of the ladder, then you see it is quite logical, he said, that it could happen. And, he went on to say, probably did ensue. Automatically, as a natural consequence of the imminent laws and successive configurations of the material universe. Incidentally, almost as an afterthought, he also said this, there is no need, at least, to postulate any non-natural metaphysical intervention in the course of evolution. My friends, it's about time you began to look at statements such as this and look into some of these books. They're available. You can buy paperbacks like the one by Wesley Lanyon, I believe it was, on the biology of birds that I have. And we have quoted from some of these in the pages of the Plain Truth magazine. You can look. If you've got a red pencil, you can take a simple test. You can get an article on evolution or a book on evolution or on biology, paleontology, any of the various related studies that have to do with the supporting of evolutionary thought. And you can take that red pencil, and every time you see the word theory, postulate, or we guess, or suppose, or maybe, or could be, or perhaps, you underline it. And then you go back and look, and you're going to think you got a book with the measles. You really are. You're going to think you got a book with the measles because it's going to look like it's red everywhere, and it won't be like a red-letter Bible. Now, you can, by contrast, go through the promises in the Bible, and you take a red pencil, and you underline every perhaps, and maybe, and possibly, and could be, and we've been led to assume, and suppose, and scientists believe, and ministers are coming to feel, and the pastors generally are agreed that. Every time you find those words, you underline them, and then you compare the two. And you're going to see that one framework is pretty shaky and sketchy, filled with a lot of possibles and maybes, and the other is filled with absolute positive assurance, guarantees, promises, commands, direct statements, dogmatic, absolute positive statements, and not a bit of supposes, perhapses, maybes, and guesswork in the whole structure of it. Now, again, there was an admission in another section of the same book on evolution. Nothing I then learned, he wrote, had any bearing at all on the big and real questions. Who am I? Listen to this admission from a very noted evolutionist. Nothing I then learned, going back to his past education, had any bearing at all on the big and the real questions. Who am I? What am I doing here? What is the world? What is my relationship to it? Not that I did or could specify these questions at the time, just speaking of people in adolescence, perhaps. I only felt them as an unformulated dissatisfaction, a sense of fatal incomprehension of my own being. He said if any of my teachers dreamt of formulating such questions for me, they never dared to live their dream. I believe all adolescents, he wrote, the bright equally with the dull, go through such a phase of incoherent self-questioning and disorientation. They usually simply bury the questions and try to forget them, or they settle for answers that are palpably false. You know, that's what a lot of people who believe in evolution have done. They have buried the real questions and they have settled for answers that are patently untrue Or they've come up, like a lot of people have, with a sort of a personal notion, a personal philosophy of life, they call it, something that they like to live on or by, but it just has the hazy idea that, well, I guess there may be a God out there, but the idea that I could prove it never occurs to most people, and the relationship of these people to that God, if he does live and if he's an intelligent being and has left us his word and his laws, never seems to enter their minds. But I'll tell you this, if that God does exist, and if he has existed all this time, and if Jesus Christ of Nazareth is alive, if he walked out of that tomb, and if he has a great purpose and a plan for your life and can tell you why you are alive and what you're doing here, then the biggest search in your life and the most urgent question for you is to find out what are the answers to those questions. Science and evolution says we don't have the answer. We don't know. God Almighty says, I have the answer and I do know. And it's the source to everything you really want. It's the source to everything that has been denied you, and the reason why a lot of us are living under an absolute curse today. And if you want that curse removed, and you want to live happily, and you want to find the way to the most successful, wonderful, balanced, warm, friendly, completely, well, how do you say it, joyous and scintillating existence that is possible to have, then it's time you began to look into the book that is going to answer for you the questions, who am I? What am I? Why am I alive? And where am I going? Now, another article that came in recently. This is an answer to one of the articles in the Plain Truth magazine, a letter, I should say. And this is an answer to the article on a theory for the birds. For instance, we were explaining in the pages of the Plain Truth magazine, the last number, that evolution believes the closest living relatives to birds are crocodiles. That's like saying that men are related to houseflies, and I suppose that some people would even believe that, I'm not sure. But at any rate, the letter goes, after reading your article on a theory for the birds, I got to thinking, just what if evolution were true and takes place by blind chance? Just how probable would it be? Pretty healthy thought. So this fellow began to think about it. And he said, I've heard an evolutionist say that there is a 1 in a million chance of developing a specialized apparatus for a particular species considered over enough time. In your article, you listed 6 different specialized apparatuses, feathers, for birds this is, the respiratory system, the digestive system, the nervous system, specialized bills, and nest-building techniques. Now, let us assume that the evolutionist is correct when he says that there is a 1 in a million chance for developing each of these. According to the laws of mathematics, that gives the bird 1 chance in 1,000 decillion, which is a 1 followed by 36 zeros, of developing all 6. Now he went on to say, for the sake of illustration, let us make 2 further assumptions. 1, that we will have a bird after the 1,000 decillion generations, and 2, that the time between generations is 1 second, which is not much wilder than some of the assumptions, he said, in parenthesis, made by evolutionists. 1 second is not a very long space of time, but 1,000 decillion seconds figures out to be about 3,168,820,000,000,000,000,000,000 years, which is about 792,205 trillion times the latest estimate of the age of the Earth. Yes, given enough time, the evolutionist can do anything. Given enough time. End of letter. There's somebody that took a pen and pencil and began to figure the mathematic possibilities of you going out and seeing a sparrow in the tree in your front yard, if you still have a tree, if you're that blessed and that fortunate. But that's right exactly where we are with this idea of evolution. Now, last time I told you that I was going to tell you a little bit about a fantastic creature, a moth, that is way ahead of science, with an early warning system, a network of radar jamming techniques, sonar jamming techniques, an early warning system that lets a very lumbering, slow-flying creature escape a very fast creature with supersonic night-fighting radar gear. This sounds like a World War III battle between jets, but it's not. It's the way a moth can escape a bat. Now, it's a fantastic thing, so let me just tell you. This appeared in Time and Tide, a British news magazine some time ago, on an article talking about how insects actually have pre-programmed computers built into them. American scientists have been taking a look at the insect species, which they point out develop early warning systems against aggressors, and in agriculture and architecture, millions of years before intelligent man appeared on the earth. Now, I think that's very nice of these creatures to have developed something. Why they did it, why did they need to survive? Well, nobody knows. Why are they here? A lot of people wish they weren't. Nobody seems to know. Some people begin to think that maybe there's a reason for a balanced environment. Maybe there's a reason for a harmonious, completely interdependent and balanced earth for man to live upon. Maybe that has a purpose behind it. Others say, oh, now that isn't satisfactory, and all of it's just chance and accident and so on. But at the annual meeting of the National Academy of Sciences, a Dr. Carol Williams of Harvard University said that the next leap forward, you know, biologists are always leaping or talking about leaps. And it's about like that 1,000-foot ladder with the missing 6 rungs. You take a leap, and somebody says, look out for that first step. You know, when they say, well, now, we don't have any answer for the origin of the universe, the solar system, life, laws, force, energy, and time. But once you assume all of these, once you give us these, then we can play with the rest of it from then on, and we can give you the answers. That's like saying, well, good luck. It's 1,000 feet to the bottom. 6 rungs are missing. Hope you make it. That's not very good odds. Well, anyway, they said the next leap forward in biology might be understanding of how that complicated computer, the central nervous system of animals, performs. Insects, they said, are good studies, good subjects, because, they said, in the 500 million years since they evolved from lowlier forms, I mean, how lowly can you get? You're a gnat, and you're a mosquito, and you evolve from lowlier forms. They have achieved incredible miniaturization of the parts. Now, I'm going to make that the subject of an article in the Plain Truth magazine, that and chemical warfare. I'm going to show you a picture of Freddy the Frog, who is trying his very level best to devour a beetle, and the beetle squirts him with a horrible chemical mixture which makes the frog stick his tongue out and say, ah! And you're going to see that in a future number of the Plain Truth magazine. And also, you're going to see a little beetle standing on his head, taking careful aim as he is about to spray an offending insect with a horrible noxious mixture of some kind of a gas that is going to make this other creature leave him alone. Now, then when you begin to investigate how could these insects have done this, how did they survive without it, what led to the gradual, you know, aeons, millions, billions of years, that they gradually evolved this type of thing, and why did they, and how did they, and just to try to answer the questions that come up in evolution, in applying them practically and in a day-to-day, common-sense, layman's fashion to any creature you can investigate around you. Now, science gives you all of this pressure, intellectual pressure. It says if you don't believe it, you probably don't know anything. Well, all right, let them go ahead and say that, but I don't believe that. I'd like to look into it. I'd like to find out. I'd like to know that if I'm going to believe one or the other, I can base it upon plenty of fact. And I see that evolution is a faith in absolute nothingness. Now, these flying machines, said this doctor, are fantastic examples of biological engineering. Makes you wonder, what is the name of the god of evolution? Natural selection? Chance? Biological engineering? The name of my God is the eternal creator, the Father in heaven. The Bible calls him Yahweh, or Yahweh. The YHVH that is in the YHWH that appears in the Old Testament was always translated with the capital letters L-O-R-D, Lord, which means the ever-living one, the one with life self-inherent within himself, the one who is the author and the originator of life, the creator, the one who said, I am, the beginner of life, the creator of every force and energy, and the one who presently sustains these things. That's the name of my God. What about you? Well, they said these are fantastic examples of biological engineering. Now, I worship the God who made biology. I worship the God who made these insects and the birds and designed their feathers. I don't worship blind chance. They come into the world, for example, goes the article, with their computers pre-programmed. Now, in our knowledge, we know that a computer has to be built by a man, and that any programming has to be fed into it by something or somebody with superior knowledge. Why don't we follow the same obvious conclusions in our observations in natural science? Well, because there's a natural antagonism, and a man doesn't want to admit that there is anybody bigger around than him. For example, every action a fly will have to take to operate efficiently in the environment into which it is born has been prescribed in advance. Interesting comment, don't you think? But they cannot learn. Now, this is interesting, too. Professor Vincent Dethier, another American scientist, has spent 15 years on and off trying to educate flies. Trying to educate flies. He rigged up a miniature bar, which, if pressed by the fly, would reveal a bit of food. The flies, you know how flies are tenacious around a cake or something, they can smell food. Now, these flies, though physically able to press this bar, never tumbled to the fact that in doing so, they could earn a meal. Punishment for failure. He punished them for failure in the form of a slight shock, an electrical shock of some kind. It did not help. Dr. Dethier found absolutely no evidence that it was possible to teach a fly anything. He said cockroaches are better pupils, and bees appear to be the brightest insects of all. You know, cockroaches are pretty smart. The minute somebody turns on the light, there they go off the counter. It's really tough to catch them. So, I imagine that they can be taught a little something. But at any rate, he said, but with them as with other insects, it is the innate or pre-programmed behavior that counts, and not learned behavior. Now, another scientist is trying to resolve the enigma of the central nervous systems of animals by studying a counter-sonar system developed by moths, developed by or put in, this is the question, against predatory bats. Bats emit high-pitched chirps, you know, and navigate back and forth by echoes that receive back. It's echo ranging, just like a sonar equipment, sonar gear in a submarine, just like radar, by high-frequency waves going out and coming back. Now, this scientist moths have a nerve cell in each ear that can tune in on bat sonar. Did you know that? They tune into this frequency, and this early warning enables the slow-moving moth to start running away before the faster bat gets on its trail. What interests the scientist is this. How does the moth's computer translate the meager intelligence from only a couple of nerve cells into the appropriate muscular actions? And they don't know. And then they begin to estimate how many nerve cells there are and all of that, and how they have 100,000 or so nerve cells altogether in insects. And then they talk about how there are 3 million insect species. Boy, it's a real headache for them to figure how this occurs. Well, if your name is on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine, you will be getting articles every single month right along this line, and your children are going to enjoy them. And especially if you're a high school or a college student, you really need them. And also in every number of the Plain Truth magazine, articles about world news in the light of Bible prophecy. For instance, in the current number is this article, Why Won't an Arctic Tern Turn Around for Over 8,000 Miles? Why do these globetrotters fly from the cold, clear across the hot and the warm belts, clear down to another cold area, and migrate? Here is one of the most puzzling and yet one of the most highly informative articles you will ever read on mysterious paths in the sky, how bird migrations baffle evolutionists. And also the article on Kosygin reveals Russia's real fear. You know the purpose behind Prime Minister Kosygin's visit to Britain recently, but here's on the spot article with our own scoop news photos in full color from on the spot, number 10 Downing Street. All of it is here. Also the article, Why Celebrate Easter? An exciting preview of tomorrow's cities. And get the booklet on the wonderful world tomorrow, what it will be like. It's free of charge and no price if you write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. That's all we ask. There is no price, no follow-up, no request for money. The address again in just a moment. Until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.